Well, hello and welcome again to the No Ties Allowed podcast. You can find this podcast and our show notes at www.notiesallowed.com. And we have a bit of a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on this blog and podcast are not necessarily those of our employers, organizations, or wives. Please do not hold them accountable for what we say. But we're glad you're here with us. I'm T.R. Knight with Taylor University, and with me this week is...
Tom Nurkula at Taylor University.
Tim Young with LightSys Technology Services.
And we're pleased to say we have another guest speaker with us, and this week we have...
Antoine Wright from Mobile Ministry Magazine.
Well, welcome, Antoine. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Antoine, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do and why we are interested in having you on the podcast.
Well, I'll use Tim's word, and I'm a bit of a mobile technology maven. Mobile Ministry Magazine is kind of my stick, if you will, a magazine that looks at the intersection of faith and mobile technology, and really what our ministry is able to do with the understanding and the use of mobile technology, or, you know, in a sense, what are the implications of mobile technology as it comes into ministry. And so this magazine really looks at that, explores that subject. It's probably as high level and as detailed as it can get because it's kind of new. I get to play the role of the primary voice behind this effort.
So, can you give us a quick summary of why... What kind of impact does mobility have, or potential impact, you know, as far as Christianity and all that?
Sure. Well, one of the things to recognize with mobile technology, mobile computing, mobile phones, all of the above, is the fastest growing media technology that has ever existed at this moment. So at the time of our recording, if you will, there are over 4 billion people who own one mobile phone, just one. And there are almost a billion people that own more than one. There has never been some technology that has grown that fast, that wide, in the short time that this technology has been available, on a consumer level at least. So in 25 years, you've gone from a few thousand people to 4 billion people. There's just nothing of that sort. In addition to that, you have the communication streams and the communication activities that mobile tends to facilitate. It's very personal. It's available, you know, at the moment of any type of creative inspiration. So, you know, as soon as you want to take a picture or text somebody or record something, your mobile is right there with you. It's available in those transaction moments when you want to share something, when you want to purchase something. It also kind of serves, and this is kind of my analogy to things, it's like the magic wand that you saw in Mickey Mouse's Fantasia. You know, he put the hat on and he has this magic wand and he's able to create his own world. And with mobile, we kind of move computing from this broadcast, somewhat passive, you know, means of looking at it to a reality that we can start to begin to shape, begin to mold, as well as look at through our own personal lens. And this power, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, this power of mobile to do all of this, you know, in something that fits in your pocket. And, you know, depending on your phone, it might last for 6 hours or 2 days, 3 days. You know, this has the ability and has shown the ability to change economies, change the way that we communicate with one another, change social behaviors, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse, you know. And the Bible has always been central in understanding how we relate to God, how we relate to one another. And it's very much an interesting question to have. Okay, I've got this technology that's also changing the way that I react with people, changing the way I react with my world around me. And now I have the Bible that also does this. Do these two work in concert with each other, or are they in conflict? And if they work in concert, how do they work in concert with one another? And if they're in conflict, why does that conflict occur? Is that conflict culture? Is that conflict, you know, the nature of God's heart, God's character towards us? Or is there something else there? And I really believe that to answer that question allows us to live forward. We can really be I guess the best way to say it, we're not reacting to life around us. We're actually living in front of the life in front of us.
Now, you know, you gave these numbers of how many people own these phones and or you know, mobile devices and whatnot. Is that just in the Western world, or we're all?
That's all. So, as of about roughly the middle of August, we confirmed that there are 7 billion people in the world. Everybody, 7 billion, and of that 7 billion, we have 4 billion of those people that have a mobile phone, and that's across the entire world. And I guess the irony of it is that the less developed the nation, the more phones they have. Which is interesting, but it, you know, it kind of speaks to, you know, the base communication needs. We all yearn to be connected. And the most important thing in any culture is your connection with somebody else. And a mobile phone being a symbol and really an activity of ownership of the connections that I have with the people, the activities that are most important to me. And so in our least developed nations, you know, or our least economically great nations, that's a better statement, we find, you know, the proportion of phones to people to be 1-to-1, in some cases 2-to-1, 2-to-1, 2 phones per person. We find in those areas, we also find situations where people are sharing a mobile phone. They might share one phone, but there are multiple SIM cards being owned, and so it's one phone, but I pop my SIM card in when I'm ready to use to our community phone. When you get into more developed nations, and I'll use the U.S. as a good example, we already are bombarded with TV, radio, internet. We have broadcast media. We have narrowcast media. You know, on top of that, you add mobile phone, and mobile becomes, you know, an extra layer on top of all those other communication channels. The U.S., for example, 330 million people, and if you, you know, take out all of the kids under 5 and all of the adults over 75, 98% of the population has a mobile phone. So,
is there an easy way to characterize who does not have a mobile phone? I mean, is that a particular people group, a particular geographic location, a particular economic class? What is the typical non-mobile phone user look like?
There isn't one. There just isn't one, you know. And it seems weird to say that, you know, because when you look at the other media and other social strata, you can say, for example, you know, TV ownership falls off at a certain income level. You know, at a certain income, there's no TV. You know, at a certain income level, there's no internet. That's not really the same with mobile. Everybody, every class, if you will, of persons, is identified with having a mobile device. And it's strange, it's weird. And at the same time, it becomes an opportunity for the kind of, shared gospel engagement that the body has always been looking for.
So is it fair to say that there isn't any real impediment to, I guess I'm sounding like a sort of a mobile phone advocate kind of person here, but I mean, if I was a marketing person working for one of the vendors or one of the providers, it sounds like there's no real barriers to getting a phone into the hands of every human being other than just time.
Time and a signal.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a signal, you can get a phone. And, you know, it doesn't have to, the signal doesn't have to even last that long. It just needs to be long enough for somebody to be able to send a text message.
Wow.
Really. You yeah. know, I mean, that's all it really needs to be, you know, and that, I mean, because, I mean, mobile phones use so little power, you don't need the infrastructure of an entire power grid. You just need an antenna that's powered long enough to talk to another antenna.
Right.
You know, it becomes this really accessible, I'd almost say it's almost cheap. You know, if I can build a generator, there's a good chance I can build a cellular antenna not too long after that. If I can build a cellular antenna and they have phones, well, they're connected.
Is it really cheap? I was on a short-term mission trip about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So it was, you know, still not early in the adoption curve internationally, but still, you know, fairly early. We were in Central America and shopping at a fairly large town's pretty vibrant market. And, you know, you're identified as a Westerner and sort of hammered with requests for donations and handouts and so forth. And one little girl came up to my wife and was selling these necklaces that my wife was particularly attracted to. And so she bought one. And, you know, kind of thinking that this little girl is sort of impoverished and she's helping support her family and so forth. She's maybe 12 or 13 years old. And as soon as the transaction ended, my wife hears a phone ringing. And, well, her phone wasn't the world phone, so it couldn't have been hers. It turns out that this little girl that's selling, you know, necklaces to support her family has a cell phone on her that's, you know, got minutes. And we're a little taken aback by that. You know, we have this view that this kid is maybe, you know, living in a sort of substandard housing, but she still has a cell phone. Is that common? Does a cell phone represent sort of a status symbol that people in a developing country can't afford, but they still get? Or?
Well, it's a symbol. Yes, it is a symbol, but it's the type of phone that you have that is the status symbol, not the fact that you have one. Remember, communication is really the base human need that one person needs to be connected to another. But the more affluent you are, the better your phone is. And so we're going to take that situation 5 years ago, the phone that she has might be a Nokia 1100, you know, which is, you know, the best selling phone of all time, rugged, flashlight, torch, FM radio. But if she, you know, wants to show to her community that she's more affluent and that she's got some sense of upward mobility, she maybe moves up to, you know, a BlackBerry.
Right.
You know, and so it's not necessarily having the phone is the sense of affluence, but it's the type of phone that you have in many communities that describes affluence. And so, you know, the American affluence, you know, if you have a BlackBerry still in America, you're still looked at as somebody that either talks too much on your email, or there's an IT department that's taking care of you. You know, but if you have an iPhone, you're affluent, you're a rebel, you know, you're this, you're that, you're those. And so it's not necessarily anymore just having a phone. It used to be, you know, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, just right. Having a phone was an issue of affluence. But we're well past that.
You know,
it's really now, it's a type of phone that you have, and what can you do with that phone is the next question after that, you know, because when I move past that Nokia 1100, I can do more than just have a torch, have an FM radio, send simple text messages, do voice calls. Okay, I maybe move to a phone that can do some, you know, medium grade to high grade applications. And then, you know, the top of the rung is, oh, yay, I got an iPhone. You know, I've got a couple billion applications at my disposal, which means all I'm going to do is play Angry Birds all day.
Well, and we even heard our pastor went on a trip to Africa. And Africa is one of these continents did not have a major copper infrastructure. So they're putting cellular everywhere. That's how they're getting the communication and how they're getting their internet and everything is a lot of cell towers. But what our pastor was kind of startled with is he was out in the bush, way out in the bush driving. Their truck broke down. And
he had a great signal.
Yeah, well, as he said, their truck broke down and they didn't know what to do. None of them actually had world phones. They hadn't thought about that. They did have a sat phone. But then this guy comes pulling up in another truck to help them. And they're asking, you know, to fix it. And he whipped out an iPhone. In the middle of nowhere, Africa, this guy pulls an iPhone out, calls them up, tells them the directions they need, you know, how to get there. And he was just kind of flabbergasted, one, that the cell phone worked out here in the middle of nowhere. But two, that the guy that drove up had an iPhone. And it just kind of startled him when it happened. And I, you know, we talked about it from a technology perspective. To be honest, the U.S. is way behind in cellular technology compared to a lot of other nations.
Yes, we are. We are way, way behind. And part of that is really because we have so much, you know. It's a good and a bad thing, you know. The affluent discussion always comes up around Christmas time anyway. The fact that we have and we've had over 100 years in the U.S. of no war really being on this ground. So there's been no on this soil kind of war to tear up the infrastructure. So we've got railroad and copper laid from the late 1880s. You know, that's still backboning the TV that's going into the, you know, the connection going into your TV. We've got radio, we've got TV, you know, we've got cable TV. Then we have internet. And now you add mobile on top of that. I mean, we have already, all of these other channels, where, as you say, you know, in, for example, Kenya, you know, Nairobi specifically, there is no copper infrastructure. And the places that do have copper, if they keep it very long, those are very few and far in between. It's much better, much easier, much faster to just skip, you know, from, okay, I've got a railroad, let's just go straight to the mobile phone.
Wow.
And that's happened in spades around the world, you know. It's okay for it to happen like that. You know, the implications, though, become, you know, as a missionary, okay, when I go overseas, I have to totally throw away all of my perceptions about my affluence. I got to pitch it. It's got to go way far away, because the phone that I threw away yesterday most probably will be in the hand of the person I'm going to minister Christ to.
Yeah. So what kind of what ways are
shuddering thoughts, but
yeah. What ways do you see the gospel going out on all these devices? I mean, they're everywhere, but how are Christians using these things?
The first way is the most simple. Do you have a Bible on your phone? That's by and large that's been the most simple. That's been the most consistent paradigm with mobile for the last 12, 13 years. Do you have a Bible on your phone? And, you know, because the first point of ministry that many evangelists, missionaries understand is, you know, I need to give you a Bible, you know, because I'm not going to be with you often. God will, and his word is here. And so that's the first thing. And so we have tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of Bible applications. In the last couple of years, we've started seeing people move away from specific, you know, hey, you've got your King James Bible with you, to, hey, you got a King James Bible, but here's a reading plan application that go along with that Bible application. So they're getting people not to just read the text, but actually to read it consistently. Because giving somebody a Bible is not necessarily actually giving them knowledge of what's in the text. The next thing that we're seeing, and it's in bits and pieces, is really small. It's an area that I wish to see more of personally, is games that are based on the Bible. And this is, you know, everything as simple as, you know, a Bible Scrabble on your phone, Exodus, which is the name of one game. There's another game, the actual name of the game escapes me right now, but the person actually takes a few segments of scripture from Second Chronicles and the different kings, and you literally play as that character during that time, and you're seeing biblical events unfold as you play this role-playing game. It's pretty neat. That's kind of the stuff that we're seeing being developed now and in the last couple of years. The other item that we're seeing in terms of software and Bible application or religious application is the idea of using the Bible as a foundation for an educational curriculum. So how do I teach you to, you know, speak another language or to speak or to read your trade language, a trade language that's specific to your region? While I do this by using, you know, the tome that's most prevalent, and in many cases that is the Bible. And so a Bible that's been translated into a local language via audio or text is then placed onto a mobile device, and now a person is able to learn the language by learning scripture. And it's been pretty neat to see, you know, Southeast India, the Kiosk Evangelism Project has been pushing that, and it's really neat to see people, you know, the Bible kind of open up to them when they see somebody else on their phone speaking the Bible, you know, versus them just simply reading it. That's really neat stuff. Really, really neat. So those are kind of the areas that we see right now, the primary areas that we see right now. I'm hoping, and one part hope, another part activity, to see more in the terms of discipleship and education materials. So how do we build, you know, community development type materials, you know, health aids, wellness prevention, using a mobile device, you know, to help people who, you know, who are in a culture where diseases literally take them out earlier than they probably should. How do we use the mobile in those situations? Those kind of poke my heart a little bit more than most.
What kind of formats are you using for this? I mean, because there's so many different kind of phones. Are we sticking to, like, text files that are being moved to phones? Are you transferring it using, like, micro SD cards? I mean, how are you getting the Bible from phone to phone?
Okay. Two ways, and it depends basically on the infrastructure that you have. In our beautiful, cool United States of America-style infrastructure, go to your local app store, download it. and that's over Wi-Fi or your cellular data connection. In those kind of environments, in developed areas where internet is not as expensive or Wi-Fi is quite prevalent, that's the entry point, the first entry point. The second entry point that's most often used in developing nations is that of sharing via Bluetooth, person to person. So I beam to you the file or files from my mobile to yours, or we swap memory cards. I have the content saved on my memory card. I take it out of my mobile. I stick it in yours. You copy it to your phone memory, and you give me back my card. In terms of formats, you have text, .txt. For anything from your simple, hey, this is how I'm doing kind of document, to Bible files. For text documents, HTML files, flat files are quite useful. Just about every mobile phone has a web browser that can view it without that data connection needed. For audio files, you have AAC for your Apple devices, MP3, and MP3, depending on if it's voice only, you'll see it around 42 kbps. For mono voice, you'll see for music files as low as 64K. Below that, it gets kind of choppy, all the way up to 192 kbps for more, if you will, verbose, music-laden type audio files. For video files, you have WMA on occasion, Windows Media Audio files that some devices can play. You have the .RM, Real Media format, QuickTime, the many devices can play. You have M4V, MAPEG 4 video, which many mobile phones already record in when they're doing video recording. They don't usually require an external player. Good gosh. And there are like one or two more formats that my brain is just totally went blank on for video formatting. Digital Shores Media actually has a really good guide on their blog to the video formats and audio formats that they're using. They, along with other folks such as Streaming Face and 316 Networks, they all use kind of the same type of formats for files, whether people are downloading them online or able to use those to pass person to person. A, because they're small, but then B, because those formats are most compatible with the most number of mobile phones that are in use today.
We've seen that firsthand, the importance of making those files shareable and whatnot. We have students working on a project with Global Recordings Network on the Android platform, and that was something that was kind of new to us, just the ways in which these files get shared, because we're so used to just thinking about a direct download over the cell tower or maybe over a Wi-Fi connection. But Bluetooth and SD card sharing is something that's a key requirement for that app, so that particularly if people are going to be, you know, off the grid in the bush someplace and they want to be able to propagate that recording off to other people, it's been a big challenge for them inside the organization to do these conversions. They have recordings in something like 6,000 different dialects on their way to 12,000 of gospel material, Bible teaching, worship songs, that sort of thing, and they've had to basically be reducing the bit density to be able to fit it onto these devices that they're targeting for the field. it's really an interesting process, and it's cool to think about these things going viral, you know, even if it's a person to person, hand to hand, here's my SD card, to propagate it out into the community.
Yeah, I mean, and for a lot of our organizations, you know, both religious and secular, who are going into mobile, that is their challenge. They have to actually kind of go away from the current way / old way of doing things, was make something really high quality, irregardless of size, to making something good enough quality that's passable.
Right.
You know, and, you know, media producers and my creative friends, you know, they are extremely anal about quality. You know, if they can, if everything could be, you know, a WAV file that's totally uncompressed,
right.
You know, they would be happy, you know, but nobody's going to sit there and wait for 2 hours for a 10-second WAV file to transfer, you know. And so in passing materials from mobile to mobile or from laptop to mobile, speed is definitely of the essence. And compatibility is also of the essence, you know. Unfortunately, some mobiles are better than others. You know, as your team is finding out with Android, you know, there are some Android models you just kind of stay away from. They're not helpful there. And then you have, you know, about 80% of the world, 70 to 80% of the world are not using smartphones. So you can't just use, you know, the highest density, highest bit rate, semi-highest bit rate format. You really have to find something that works on a 2.2-inch screen and transfer it quickly and still get the message across.
Right. You mentioned in your introductory comments that the mobile technology could be used for good or for ill. That seems to be kind of a recurring theme in the tech community. Is, you know, is there something that's kind of inherently good or inherently bad about these technologies, or is it the uses to which we put them, or does the possible benefit outweigh the possible harm that the technology might be doing? And my question, I guess, is how do you see sort of God's superintendence of technology in that regard? Is it a net positive that we're getting this kind of great penetration into the entire planet, or is it causing harm?
Unfortunately, it's both, and it's equal parts both. You know, you can't have a discussion, for example, about the prevalence of mobile phones without talking about what goes into making a mobile phone. And when you start asking, okay, what do you mean what goes into making a mobile phone? You start looking at different materials, energy requirements, and you start saying, well, hold on, if I am, you know, using this rare earth material and they're fighting a war in that one place where that rare earth material is prevalent, is my mobile phone causing that war? You know, and you can't get away from that. You really just can't get away from that. And I think it's really interesting in Exodus when God is asking Moses, hey, listen, I need you to build me an ark and a tabernacle, you know, and it's got to be portable, it's got to be mobile, and go find me these craftsmen that already know how to build this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like he went to find people who just learned it on the spot. It wasn't like, you know, Moses tapped them with the staff. You know, after they drank the water, ate the manna, they learned how to build this. They were already building. They were already using the tools at their disposal to build whatever it was that was needed for their community. And sometimes it was good. You know, there were 2 million people. You know, some people probably couldn't walk, so you needed wheelchairs of some sort to be built. You had animals that had to be taken care of, so somebody had to build portable irrigation systems. You know, but then you also had the side where they built the golden calf. You know, and it's like, well, hold on, you're a craftsman and you built this and you used that hammer and that nail to build this irrigation system that's portable, which is awesome, and then you turned around and built a golden calf. And it's the same thing with mobile. It's like God gave us the ability to create, and that was irrespective of anything else. He said, I want you to be, this is part of my image that I create you in, and so you're going to be able to create. And because of Adam and Eve's decision that to entreat sin, to take on sin, now every decision that we make to create is going to be imbued with, yeah, we can make something really good, but we also have the propensity of making something that directly goes against the heart of God. And with mobile, there's no way to say you get away from it completely. You know, you can, you know, try to pull the role of a gentleman in Switzerland who dresses in tinfoil. because he doesn't want to have anything to do with mobile phones. That's been in the news recently. You know, and it's like, well, okay, you could do that, but you're of no good use to anybody, because now you're doing the other, you're, the flip side of that is now you're forsaking the fellowship with one another. And yeah. It's like, okay, you just made yourself a monk in order to make a point, but the point that you're making is not actually drawing people towards you. You know, catch 22 here. So with mobile, it's like, okay, yeah, there are some good things that can happen. We can teach people how to read using a mobile device, because text messaging, in its simplistic terms, 140, 160 characters, is great. We can bite-size that off and learn how to read and how to understand context really quickly. Great. But do we also teach people when we're doing that, okay, what's healthy communication? I do not text your wife at 11 o'clock at night. You know, we also have to teach that. And as a body, we have to go in it with both of those in mind. You know, we have the ability to teach you how to use the device or to use the services on this device for the glory of God, to get his name to the ends of the earth. But while we're teaching you how to get this to the ends of the earth, we need to let you know about its addictive properties. You know, about its ability to bleed your wallet dry. You know, if you're not careful, discerning, stewarding your materials, about, you know, what went into building this and building the ability for you to have this communication. Is it really worth, you know, a war in the Congo? You know, if it is, okay, then if you use this phone, how are you going to help those people in the Congo live without your mobile phone being active? That's really the place of this technology, and I believe every technology that God has given us, the ability to create or to use.
There was a book years ago called The Gospel Blimp. I don't know if any of you guys have read it or heard of it, right? But
yeah. The
deal was that this guy would have a Goodyear blimp kind of a thing that he would use to evangelize his neighborhood by flashing Bible verses on the bottom and dropping leaflets from the sky and stuff. And it kind of became a metaphor for the pointless use of technology to try to do something that is maybe more effectively done on a face-to-face basis. Is mobile technology or internet evangelism, or, you know, you could choose a lot of the different technology things. Is mobile technology the latest gospel blimp, or is there some substance there, or is that substance dependent on face-to-face communication with human beings? And, you know,
it is a blimp, and it's also an enabler to get off the blimp.
Yeah,
that's a good way to say it. You know, I firmly believe, you know, this is a handshake technology. Mobile is a means for me to shake your hand, find out just enough about you that I can actually make a decision. Hey, I want to engage, you know, in some type of relationship, some type of relational capacity with you. You know, does it have to end at face-to-face? No, not necessarily. Actually, it wasn't until this year that I met for the first time face-to-face a brother who has been a very good friend to me for the last 7-plus years. You know, and we've carried most of our conversation through text and instant messaging and what have you. You know, it is possible to demonstrate the gospel, to be the gospel to one another, you know, using mobile, using internet evangelism. But you do have to pay attention to context. And sometimes you really do need to make the decision, hey, I need to get off the blimp and I need to come face to face with you and talk to you, not as if, you know, not through that intermediary of an internet protocol or a cellular switch, but I really need to talk to you face to face, meet with you, sup with you, so that, you know, that bond, because it, you know, the gospel kind of begins and ends at the bond that God has with us. And, you know, if God only wanted a cell phone relationship with us, we would have had a cell phone long ago, you know, but he kind of decided, and it's funny, I was talking about this last night to a friend. God did not want to have an intermediary. He talked to Moses, but he wanted to come off the mountain and talk to everybody. He wanted to walk with, and they decided, you know what, God, you're not good enough face-to-face. I want the cell phone version. You know, and it was like, you know, God, you know, we don't, we kind of have that option, you know, to kind of stick with the cell phone version of living with one another in these faith communities, but, you know, the impetus is on us to do more than just have an intermediary in between us to really jump the chasm and be like Emmanuel, God with us, literally be with one another.
So it seems like that idea of incarnational ministry really has to inform the way that we promote and use these things. There must be an app for that, right? Or how we decide what apps to build, or how we decide what apps to deploy in the community that are focused on that, as opposed to just sort of the gee whiz factor of I can contact somebody in Africa and maybe share the gospel with them, but it's a vehicle toward creating some sort of a face-to-face incarnational thing.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like I said on the magazine, for the mobile ministry magazine, this last year our focus was understanding context, understanding the context of the technology, the context of our faith in it. This next year, our goal, our focus is the Bible as digitally applied, not the Bible as an application. You know, so really, there isn't a nap for that. It's how do I apply it? I am the application for the Bible, you know, and so what does that Bible in my hand begin to look like, or should it look like, so that my community, my family, see Jesus walking with them, God with them, not looking for the latest shiny icon to download that does it for them.
Right.
Well, thank you, Antoine. This has been a wonderful conversation with just what you're doing in the ministry and just kind of how mobility is impacting the missions world.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You guys are awesome. I still have my drawings from last year, earlier this year, and I'm smiling because I'm looking at my drawings. I'm like, man, these guys are really cool.
Well, we got a couple questions for you just because we got some techie things I want to ask, and you're welcome to jump in here because I'm curious. Some stuff that showed up in the news in the last couple weeks. Two biggies, and they're actually mobile-based. That's why I wanted to ask about them. Microsoft, it's been leaked. No one's official about it yet, but it's been leaked that they're going to release Office for iOS. And the reason I find this interesting is, you know, Microsoft has Office for Mac and Windows. But on your Droid and your iOS devices, you know, you use Documents to Go, you use OpenOffice or whatever you want to use. I think it's interesting to see, is this Microsoft admitting that Windows is not going to work on a tablet that well? Are they admitting that the iPad has just won? But in any way, I love the idea of it. I think it's an interesting idea. So I'm curious what you guys think about the idea of Microsoft Office ending up on an iOS device.
I don't like Office. You know, and it's not Microsoft's fault, it feels like I've outgrown it in a sense. I do think it's a good idea for Microsoft. I mean, Office is by far the product not named Windows that they make the most money off of. So, you know, to miss an opportunity like 50 million people who own an iPad, that, you know, that would be foolish.
Yeah.
You know, even if they only charge $10 for that, that's a lot of
Well, especially you know, when, whether you like it or not.
I don't think
it's the standard in most businesses, you know, whether you like it or not. And that's why I think it's an interesting idea to see them accepting an iOS device as a business platform.
It is, and that's where it becomes interesting, because the question for Microsoft becomes, do they just give you Office and all of its beautiful ribbon interface or your iPad? Don't get me wrong, I actually like the ribbon. I'm one of, like, two people in the world that probably like the ribbon. You know, but do they actually redesign it for the tablet? Do they actually take the tablet and turn the tablet into something productive that makes sense in an office setting? You know, I mean, I used to use a tablet years ago with OneNote, and I thought OneNote was the perfect office application. Perfect. Just perfect. You know, you didn't really need anything else. You know, do they revisualize Office in that respect? And if so, then this is going to be really good for them. But if it's just a ribbon bar and a few really nasty macros, it's not going to go over well.
And they have already released Notepad for the iPad.
Yes.
Yep. So it is out. They've actually released that app, which is interesting.
I dipped my toes in the water a little bit with iWork for the iPad a couple of months ago, and I have to say it is not a compelling user experience for me. You know, they want you to believe that you're going to be able to, you know, create very long multi-page multimedia documents or giant spreadsheets or whatever. And I think the as much as I love the tablet form factor and the interface for consuming content, it is kind of painful to create content with it. Even just typing an email is sort of tedious, unless you have some sort of an external keyboard, which kind of, you know, well, if you're going to do that, why not just bring your laptop along? And my concern is that as good as Apple is at user interface, the current iWork applications are not so intuitive and not that easy to use. If Microsoft wanders into that fray, you know, they're going to take their not particularly delightful user interface propensities and try to shoehorn it into the tablet. I will not be lining up for that application, I guess.
I just thought it was interesting because of so many places already using it, it becomes a compatibility thing. You know, you want to be able to be compatible with what you're already doing.
Yeah. But, you know, I think...
Right, and I think that's where Microsoft is probably going to position it first, you know. They're going to position it first for compatibility. But, you know, like you're saying, you know, working on your tablet is a totally different can of beans. I'm weird. I don't have a laptop or a desktop. I have a mobile phone and a tablet. That's it. And so if it can't work on the tablet in an efficient manner, it doesn't get used ever.
Antoine, you just use the built-in keyboards and stuff, or do you have external input devices as well?
I've got an external keyboard for the iPad, and I have a Bluetooth joystick for the phone.
Okay.
So, you definitely need the external keyboard for the iPad. You can't type in on glasses, and you got a 1,000-word limit. You can't do more than that. Your fingers don't like you.
I agree with that.
And I use all five fingers. You know, if you're drawing, if you're sketching, if you're doing Visio type things, if all you're doing is selecting, cropping, cutting, it's fine. But that without that feedback, your fingers yell at you.
How will technologies like Siri change that?
I got a theory. I got a theory. That we're going to be doing a lot more voice interfaces when it comes to Apple's technologies. I am actually recently with a iOS 5 update. I took my Gen 1 iPad and I turned on all the gestures for it. And one of the things that started happening when I turned on the gestures is that I stopped wanting to type on my iPad. And I thought it was weird. I was like, man, I don't want to type. I mean, I'm swiping. You know, I hit the home button to turn it on. That's it. You know,
right,
I don't want
right.
buttons of any kind. And it's like, man, if I had Siri on here, oh, wait a minute. You know, and so I start seeing, I was like, oh, wow, you have this idea of pictures under glass, as one interface designer calls it, where you have all these pictures, but for me to interact with these pictures, I'm actually telling the computer, hey, cut here, you know, follow my finger and crop this or compose this text, build this appointment. I think we'll see Siri kind of replacing the idea of a keyboard,
yeah.
With the exception of certain types of interface needs. You know, I would not do HTML with Siri. I wouldn't trust it. that would be really mean. But, you know, it's you can see the advantage. You know, if I'm, you know, an admin and I'm typing memos all day, Siri all the way.
Until you're sitting in a coffee shop like you are now, and now we got everybody talking to
the tablet.
I think
it's going to be really interesting to see evolve. Well, that's always the problem, right? Or, you know,
fine. It's only the kids have stopped and looked at me.
Yeah. So that, to me, that's the thing about voice activation stuff. It's great when you're in your office by yourself, but you know, it's bad enough hearing people on their Bluetooth headsets walking around and going to the bathroom and stuff like that. If someone's
right.
dictating memos as they're just wandering through the airport and in a restaurant and everything, and you get five people all dictating memos, that's where your voice activation is going to become annoying.
Oh, come on. I mean, you don't want to hear five people talking at once. It'll be just like back in first grade.
Yep.
So. Or my class this morning.
Oh, yeah. True. Well, the other big tech news that I saw and I've been keeping track of, you know, as we all kind of laugh, BlackBerry, it's still alive, you know, when it can be. But BlackBerry is talking about changing the way they allow Wi-Fi calling and actually moving away from their UMA chipset and moving to just standard Wi-Fi calling. And the reason I think this is a big deal, you know, Wi-Fi is becoming more prevalent. We're starting to use it more. But the issue is, for those of you, if you had a BlackBerry, one of its neat features is you could be on a call on Wi-Fi, and it would translate you right into the nearest cell tower as a seamless call. But if you've tried to use like Wi-Fi on an Android or other things, you have to, as soon as you're done with it, you have to hang up the call and recall when you're on the cell phone and stuff like that. And I see in a world as we're seeing more and more Wi-Fi and more cellular, especially internationally and everything, I'll be curious to see if a standard can come up someday that actually can do that hop from a software level and not from a chip level.
UMA, it's weird. T-Mobile US, well, actually T-Mobile period, they were like one of the few carriers that actually used that standard. UMA is the standard. Other carriers did not see the means to make enough money off of it, therefore they didn't implement it on the mobiles that they carried. You know, and then you have companies like Nokia and Samsung who have been doing SIP, session interface protocol, on their mobile phones, especially their smartphones, for the better part of the last 7 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of those things like the technology's always been there, people just haven't used it, and now we're at the point with resource constraints, bandwidth constraints, frequency constraints, that it has to become not just option, but it has to be the norm. You know, and then the other part of that is with LTE coming out, you have a pure IP-based network. Being your phone is completely IP. And if your phone is completely IP, if you're on LTE phone, your phone is, you're talking IP. You're not on a circuit switch network. You're completely packet. Well, does that really matter if I'm using the cell tower or Wi-Fi at that point? It just matters if the mobile knows how to resolve whether I'm using that hotspot, that router, or I'm using that cellular tower and routing that appropriately. And, you know, I think we're seeing that transition happen, you know, where UMA didn't work or didn't work as well for folks. LTE is going to just make it work better.
That's probably very true. Okay, well then, another thing we like to talk about, and I've got a couple to share, is the whole favorite, you know, new hardware and apps and everything. I don't know if you guys have some, but the two I wanted to share that one of them has been around for a little while, but I finally started messing with friends, was the Google Hangouts. It's kind of like competitor to Skype. But the nice thing is Skype keeps charging and making it fewer the number of people you can connect video-wise. Google Hangouts lets you have multiple people for video conferencing, and it's free. It's part of the Google Plus stuff. So I thought that was kind of nice for missionaries that need to do multi-person meetings. It seems to have a pretty good throughput. The latency doesn't seem too bad. I don't know if any of you guys played with Google Hangouts at all.
I haven't. I've asked some students if they've been making use of it, and they seem to enjoy it. But it doesn't – I mean, maybe I'm just out of the loop. I don't get invited to those things, or I'm just a sad, pathetic nerd.
I have not played with it yet either.
Because I know, like, we've used TeamSpeak, we've used Ventrilo and stuff for meetings, we use Skype for this podcast, but it's interesting to see as these cloud apps come up, because then you don't need to download an app or anything to do it. And that's why I think it's going to be very popular among mission orgs to look at this. If you need a multi-person video conference, it's a free possibility.
Yeah, it does seem fun. I've done a piece of a Hangout, but I was on somebody else's PC at the time. The lack of me owning an Android device, or wanting to own an Android device, keeps me kind of away from playing a little bit more with Hangouts than I'd like to.
That's true. I've been waiting to see if they'll release it so it's compatible with the iPad. I haven't got it to work on there before, but
when we first started getting, you know, commonly getting enough bandwidth to be able to do video conferencing, I was managing a team in three different states, and we tried using video conferencing for a while, and maybe because of the novelty and because we weren't living in, you know, ubiquitous coverage of all these crazy devices, it sort of quickly degenerated into like, yeah, look and see what's out my window, or wow, it's snowing here now. And we didn't really find that much of a productivity gain strictly just because we had video. What we used much more regularly was, you know, video whiteboarding, and, you know, we're talking about an idea and want to be able to draw a picture. If the technology that was being offered by Google or whomever could provide that kind of capability, I think it would be much more meaningful for, like, I certainly would use it for interacting with our missions partners on projects, to just be able to draw stuff, to be able to demo stuff. The video itself doesn't seem to me to be that big of a value add.
I'm actually doing that in a poor man's mode right now. I have twin webcams. I put one webcam now on my netbook and one on my PC. I've actually done this with some consultings. I aim my other webcam using an old mic stand down at a table, and I can draw flow charts and do a lot of other stuff.
Right.
As a secondary camera using Google Hangouts. That's something new I've been doing over the last month or so. It's just messing with it. But like I said, it's, you know, group board and some of these online whiteboards are nice, but they're really laggy and you can't get as much three-dimensional. Where here, I can be flipping through papers. I can lay things down. So I'm actually messing around with a multi-webcam kind of thing at home right now. So something new I'm trying.
Simple document.
That sounds really close. That sounds like minority, almost like the Minority Report TED Talk I was watching the other night. Just, you know, cameras and screens everywhere and, you know, interacting in spaces. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Well, the other one I have is a fun one you'll like, Tom. I don't know if you've played yet with Scan to PDF, which is an iOS app that's out.
I haven't. I saw your link to it, but I haven't tried it out.
It's pretty slick. It doesn't have as good a resolution as I want, but especially if you're just taking a picture of part of a page or a receipt or something like that, it takes a quick picture using the camera on your iPhone or on your iPad and instantly converts it to a PDF file. So you can, you know, have it real quick. You can mail it to somebody as an attachment, as a PDF. I like the idea of, instead of just sending a really high resolution JPEG or something like that, to be able to take a PDF, which is kind of a standard in a lot of office areas. So, you know, it's not as good as using a scanner, but it actually does take a decent snapshot PDF of a document or something, or even a picture of something, and convert it to a PDF.
It's not doing OCR, is it? It's just an image?
It's just an image scanned to PDF form.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just an image. There's an Android app available for it. I reviewed that a while ago as well for scan to PDF. It's pretty good. They're not optimized, but they are definitely some big bitmap images.
Yeah.
You know, the better your phone camera is, the better.
Yeah. But like I said, it's just one of those, if PDF is a format you use, it was a handy app.
Yeah.
Any other hardware or apps or software you guys have found over the past couple weeks that you just want to share with everybody?
Let me see. I guess because I'm new on the podcast, I should probably mention anything that's jumped out to me. On the iPad, I've actually been reading this comic called Operation Ajax. It is probably the best demonstration of a book / comic / history book that I've ever seen. It's kind of like reading an old Batman graphic novel of CIA stuff. It's great. It's absolutely great. Sounds, you name it, it's beautiful. It was free until today, actually, so it's not free anymore, but I think it's about $6. It is totally worth it. Totally, totally, totally worth it. OperationAjax.com, and that's iOS only, and works better off of the iPad, bar none. And then on my phone, I'm using a Nokia Symbian phone, so, you know, I have that old dying platform, haha. but I actually use their, Nokia has a beta for a universal search application that'll search through the entire device, you know, show you your contacts, calendars for everything, and I've got years of stuff on my phone which that comes in handy for, but it has these two little widgets that actually learn how you use which contacts do you talk to and how do you talk to them, and it shows them to you on your home screen, or the applications that you use the most, and it shows those on your home screen. So you end up with this like list of most used, most frequently used contacts and applications, and you never end up having to go to the regular application screen ever. You just scroll right on through, and it updates dynamically updates. There's no, it's all on the device. It's nothing being sent to the networks like some other applications on some other platforms. So it's really neat, really, really neat. You know, the search is great, but to be able to see, you know, the contacts that you talk to the most and the applications that you access the most, right there, that's awesome. That's really awesome.
That's nice.
I have not been playing with any new or any interesting things recently. So
yeah, you're just healing, so you're still a prayer request. Well, you mentioned Operation Ajax is something you're reading. We often talk about what we've been reading here. The book that I'm getting ready to read, because it was recommended to me, and I don't know if any of you have read, there's a book called Flickering Pixels. Its subtitle is How Technology Shapes Your Faith. It's by Shane Hipps, and I got recommended that because I had been reading that book called The Church of Facebook. And it's been fascinating to read. So I don't know. Have any of you read the Flickering Pixels book?
No.
Nope. It's on my book list. It's on my book list to get to, though.
Yeah, same with here. So, I mean, I haven't read it before, but it's coming highly recommended. So I'm looking forward to kind of digging into that probably here over the Christmas holiday as one of the books I'm going to read. Any other books you guys are reading?
I finished an interesting book that was kind of a side interest, but I think it could well be useful just in tech and probably also in talking about the gospel. It's a book called Moonwalking with Einstein that's about memory. And it's not one of these, you know, cheesy how to memorize everything kinds of books. It's more of an immersive journalism kind of a thing where the author started out covering like memory championships. And then he explores a lot of the backstory behind these things, some of the ancient literature that has to do with, you know, how Cicero would memorize speeches and that kind of thing, and just really highlights some of the capabilities of the human brain. He's not a believer, to my knowledge, but just some of the amazing things that we've all got built into our heads. And it's kind of inspired me to think about how can I, in my teaching, for example, not just how can I communicate information, but how can I help equip students to keep it in their heads. And I think that also could be applied in a church or Sunday school context or an evangelistic context. So yeah, very interesting. And I just finished this a couple days ago, a book by Dan Rome, R-O-A-M. And he's writing about how to use both visual and verbal communications channels to convey information more effectively. And he's got a couple of books. One's called Back of the Napkin. That I read over the summer, and then his latest one is called Blah Blah Blah, which is a great book title. But he's trying to, the blah 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 is sort of how do you hold a meeting, how do you have a conversation with a customer, a client, a student. It certainly there's applications for contact evangelism to make a message more vivid by including both the words and some pictures that are, you know, quite simple to learn to use and as a means to help you think more clearly about stuff.
Very nice. Well, thank you all for being here. Some prayer requests to remember. Roy, who was with us this week, is in Africa. I'm not sure exactly when he gets back, but when he gets back, I'm sure he'll give us a little review of his trip. Tim, your wrist is still healing. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing a lot better. I visited the doctor this past week, and they told me that I can start using it and actually need to start using it to get the strength back. So I'm done with flexibility, just working on the strengthening, so it's going really well. But prayers are still appreciated that I continue to take care of it.
Got plenty of snow to shovel there in Minnesota?
Not yet.
Really?
No, I think we all got it.
Yeah, we got it last night.
Yes, we did. The other thing is, Taylor is getting ready to go out of session, so are all the schools in the area. So you're going to have a lot of people traveling. You have a lot of missionaries traveling home and traveling around. So just everybody have safe travels. That's many of the prayer requests for everybody. Well, thank you again, guys, coming. Thank you, Tim and Tom.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Antoine. It's awesome to hear from you. It's always a pleasure to listen to your insights and your experience. Sitting at the feet of the master, man.
Yeah, thanks, Antoine. Thanks for coming to our podcast. Well, guys, thank you for being here. For all of you who have been listening, this again has been the No Ties Allowed podcast. You can find this podcast and our show notes at www.notiesallowed.com. We'll see you next time.